Again,
Good morning.
I don't know if I'm working or not. Sounds like I am.
Yeah, sounds like you are.
Okay, good.
Ready, Andy?
At least the microphone is working, maybe. Well, I'm glad to be here this morning. I can't say that I'm not glad that I'm not in Valverde this morning. I had the privilege of preparing myself this morning in your pastor's office, and Cody has a giant whiteboard in there with what looks like sermon preparation, and you can either choose to tell him I told you this or not, but there's a whole section that begins with the purpose of the universe, and I thought, whew, that's bold, that's heavy. So there, he's really bringing it to him at Valverde this morning. But with the covenant community, the reason that we do this exchange, it's an opportunity for us to be sort of challenged culturally, especially on World Communion Sunday, even with all of the service that has led up to this so far, just that idea of breaking kind of out of our shells and welcoming others. So this morning, instead of having a white male preacher, you have a young white male preacher. But culturally, there's a big difference because I'm not from Texas, so I was not up or down on Texas. I just said I'm not from Texas. So, that is really the story of our passage as well, is this difference in culture and the challenges it brings even within the church. So the early church, we often sort of assume as this idyllic, wonderful expression of faith, but even from the very beginning, they really struggled to get along. In fact, there was a rift that probably should have broken them apart and really ended the Christian movement, and that was that God's people were the Jews, and only the Jews. For their entire national history, they were God's chosen people, a holy priesthood, a kingdom of priests. God told them in the Old Testament that they were his, out of all nations, they were his treasured possession. And that through them, they were to be impacting the world around them, and yet they remained his special chosen people. And they lived by a completely different cultural lifestyle than the peoples around them. And in the time of Jesus and Jesus' followers, we have this idea of sort of opening the democratization of God's people, the opening of God's people to all people, bringing in what is known as the Gentiles, those anyone who was outside the Jewish nation. And this was an immense struggle for the church, these early followers of Jesus, because the Jews who were following Jesus had always been Jews, and they were the chosen people, and it was hard for them to welcome with open arms those who had been outside of the Jewish nation and living outside of its laws and its commandments. They were even required to go through special sort of purification rites if they were to be inside a Gentile home and to be associating with Gentiles. So imagine going from that to, yeah, everybody come on in and let's all shake hands and get to know one another. That's a huge shift for them. On the flip side, you have the Gentiles who are following Jesus sort of without that earlier connection to the Jewish faith. And so they feel like they don't really need any connection to the Jewish faith, perhaps even to those who are making things so complicated in their following of Jesus. So they have this immense struggle in almost every expression of the early church, this Jews versus Gentiles. It's interesting because we sort of, you know, look at the church today and realize we have certain conflicts within our churches and amongst other churches. And yet the interesting thing is that early on they had problems even at a very fundamental level. They took, we see in the book of Acts that they took an offering, a gathering for widows, because at that time widows were really uncared for in the society. And so there was sort of a ministry to widows. And what was happening is that the Greek widows, those who were Gentile, were not being treated as well as those who who were Jews. So early in this church community, before we can even almost even call it a church, it's Jews for Jesus and a few Gentiles who have come in as well. Very early on, we have this sort of, well, it's really for us and not them. So much so that even some widows were being neglected. There's a wonderful story in Acts about how that's resolved. The apostles choose some Greek-speaking, we assume, some Greeks by their names to resolve the issue. So it was Greeks who were being underserved, and so they brought in the Greeks to help rectify the problem. But this is the nature of the passage. This is where it comes from, this deep rift. And Paul is sort of addressing especially the Gentiles as he begins our text for this morning. This is from Ephesians chapter 2. We're going to start in verse 11. Paul, writing to the Ephesian church, says, "So then, remember that at one time you Gentiles by birth, called the uncircumcision by those who are called the circumcision." So we're talking about Jews versus Gentiles here and the physical and spiritual laws that they live by. "A physical circumcision made in the flesh by human hands. Remember that you," and the "you" here is plural, it's y'all. So I don't know if Cody would say this on a Sunday, being from Texas, but I'm going to go ahead and change all the "yous" to "y'alls" because he's talking to the whole community here. So he says, "Remember that y'all were at that time without Christ," or they were being aliens. They were estranged from the commonwealth or citizenship of Israel, and they were strangers or foreigners to the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. But now, in Christ Jesus, y'all, who once were far off, have been brought near by the blood of Christ. For he is our peace. In his flesh, he has made both groups, the Jews and the Gentiles, into one, and has broken down the dividing wall, that is, the hostility between us. He has abolished the law with its commandments and ordinances, that he might create in himself one new humanity, in place of the two, thus making peace, and might reconcile both groups to God in one body through the cross, thus putting to death the hostility through it. So he came and proclaimed peace. In the original Greek, it's more like he brought the good news of peace. We have the word for gospel sort of tied up in there. Brought the good news of peace to y'all who were far off, and peace to those who were near. That would be the Gentiles who are far off and the Jews who are near. For through him, Jesus, both of us have access in or by the one Spirit to the Father. So then y'all are no longer strangers and aliens or strangers and foreigners, but you are, and here the NRS has citizens, but in the original it's more like fellow citizens. It's really citizens together. But you are citizens together with the saints and also members of the household of God. Continuing on in verse 20, built upon the foundation of the apostles and the prophets, with Christ Jesus himself as the cornerstone. In him, Jesus, the whole structure is joined together and grows into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom y'all also are built together spiritually into a dwelling place for God. The grass withers and the flowers fade, but the word of the Lord stands forever. Paul goes in this part of the letter from the rift that is between the Jews and the Gentiles, and he winds up with this idea that God dwells in the midst of his people. We have this idea you've probably heard before that the church is not a building, it's not something that takes place on Sunday mornings. The church is the people gathered. And that is the point that Paul is really trying to drive home here as he envisions a temple, which would have been very easy for either the Greeks or the Jews. For the Greeks, they're picturing all the temples to all of the gods and idols they have. Inside the temples would be where the god lives. So that would be where there would be an idol and they would offer sacrifices and there would be priests or priestesses there. for the Jews, they have in their minds at this time the temple in Jerusalem. This is the place where, it is the center of the Jewish faith, the holiest place to be. In fact, that's how it's referred to. You have, as you get further into the temple, you have different layers of sort of holiness, and only some people are allowed to enter them, depending on if your gender, whether or not you're a Jew, or if you serve in the priesthood. But as you get further into the temple, you come to the holiest place, or the Holy of Holies, and you have all this beautiful artwork. There are tapestries that you cross to get through there, really thick and luxurious. There's gold and there's carvings, and you have originally the Ark of the Covenant, and you have these two sort of heavenly beings pictured on either side of the Ark of the Covenant. And that's it. There is no idol or statue of God. God prohibited that. He did not allow pictures or carvings of him to be made. And so these two spiritual beings sort of encompass this space where it is said that God dwelled on earth. This was the place where God lives. All his brilliance and glory. Glory is not only bright light in the Old Testament, but also heaviness. There's a weight to it. So all this power and majesty, the presence of God on earth, right here in the holiest of holies, in the temple. Or if you're a Greek, whatever God, right there in whatever temple you may be referring to. And the point that Paul is making is that God no longer lives in the temple. He does not live in a building per se. He lives in the unity of his people. Paul goes from talking about the division between Jews and Gentiles and how it comes together to talking about the importance of unity and how really that is where God lives and moves in the earth, is in the unified relationships of his people. The problem with this, though, for the Ephesian church and all of the churches at this time is that unity doesn't come easy. It's challenging. And that's true not only for their issue with Jews and Gentiles. It's true for today. It's true in America. In fact, and I'm going to do something here. I don't know if you do it that often in this congregation, but we get lonely when we preach sometimes. And so I ask for a little feedback as we go. So just to kind of warm us up here in terms of American history. So let's talk a little bit about struggles in unity in American history, or this idea of tribalism or culture, how it brings some people in but excludes others. So who are the, as we go kind of way back into American history, who are the others, those who were the foreigners and the strangers that were excluded? And then we'll just kind of walk that through sort of American history. So going way back, any ideas, the first that were sort of excluded as outsiders, even though they had come to America?
Irish.
The Irish, good. Any group older than that one? Yeah, the Native Americans. So certainly there was the people who were there originally often were treated like they were the ones who were not welcome, that they were sort of foreigners, strangers. Who else? As we're, I got to come out here. Yeah, sure. Yeah, black African Americans, absolutely. Slaves and Chinese, yes, absolutely. So right about the same time as the Irish, the Chinese were flooding into America because of all the work and again being sort of persecuted or excluded. Other people groups?
And later the Mexicans who were here before we came.
Right, right. So the Mexicans who actually lived all the way up here into Colorado. So we even have sort of original peoples who are sort of Mexican peoples who are descendants. So some people ask, what generation are you in terms of, your Hispanic culture? And it's like, well, older than your generations. And it goes way back. All right, so Hispanics, both the old school ones and the current ones today. Any other people groups come to mind?
Mormons,
sure. Yeah, other religions, which is true even from the very beginning. So we had people coming from Europe and other places for religious freedom, and yet when they got here, they were definitely standoffish to those of other faiths, even other segments of the Christian population. So what, just in that 30 seconds of American history there, we got there, we see this common way for people to approach the world. We have our group, and then we have the groups that are outside. And for the outsiders, eventually they work their way in, and what do? They turn around and exclude the next group. And it goes on and on and on and on. And so just from that, we can see what a challenge unity is. And again, for Paul, his argument here is that unity, this unity between those who follow Jesus, is really where God's presence dwells on earth, a temple that they build for themselves, in Paul's words, is based on this unity, this struggle for us to connect with one another and be unified together. Maybe if we could just take it a step further and consider the people who we feel like who are on the outside today, that we might consider strangers or foreigners in the language of the text. In our culture or maybe our city today, why would people be sort of excluded or sort of be on the outside? On what basis would that happen? Because they are
homeless?
Great, yep. Other thoughts?
Muslims.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Or even any other faith or nationality that resembles someone who might be Muslim in some cases. Okay? What else? What other basis? So we've got it based on property and home ownership. We've got it based on religious preference. Are there other factors?
Texans.
Yes, it happens. It happens. There's another one out there? Was there?
Levels.
What levels?
Income.
Oh, income levels. Absolutely. Yeah, affluence. Absolutely. Definitely makes some people feel outside. We push people away because of that. Great. Any other thoughts?
Political.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So one of the more divisive times in our history, not the most, but one of the more divisive times in our political history.
Sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm. Any refugee. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's turn the table now. I would say that mostly because we are in Littleton, Colorado, which is middle to upper income, even in this area of the city, because most of us here are indeed white, and a few of us are male, we are probably more likely to be considered in the in. Not foreigners or strangers. Why else do you think that people like you and I would consider themselves in, part of the in crowd, the in culture? On what basis are they in instead of out?
We pay taxes.
Great. That's a great point. Others. Educational levels, yep, another great example. Mm-hmm.
Similar belief systems.
Okay, similar belief systems. Christianity is still the most common religion in America, even though it is on the decline. It's still the most common. Okay, other thoughts? It's a good start. And I think it's important for us to consider on what basis people in our society, what basis people, maybe even in our cities or even in our own congregations, are either excluded, seen as foreigners or strangers, and on what basis they are included, seen as in power or welcome or trustworthy. And remember the basis that our society often chooses those things, the very things that we set ourselves, whether it's religion or race, orientation sexually, whether it's our income level or our education level, whether it's whether or not we pay taxes or contribute some other way civically. Because the reason, the basis for being included or excluded from God's people. And the love of God has nothing to do with any of those things. And I think this is something we know, and maybe we've heard people talk about, but we still are challenged with that in our everyday lives. But this is where it begins. This is where Paul begins to help heal that rift between the Jews and the Gentiles. And it starts with just the word remember. Remember that you were once on the outside. You were outside of a relationship with God, outside of having a Messiah. You were outside of being God's special chosen people. And the way that they were moved from the outside to the inside had nothing to do with any of the qualities that we mentioned that we often judge others or ourselves are judged by. It has nothing to do with those things. And it has everything to do with the love of God in Jesus Christ. In fact, right before this, in this passage, Paul reminds the Gentiles that their salvation is not of their own doing. It is completely by faith, so that no one can boast. Paul asks them to remember what it was like being on the outside. Remember what it means to be chosen by God and freely forgiven and welcomed into the family of God. And bring that forward into our relationships, into our interactions. That's where the healing begins, with that one word, remember, whether we're talking about racism or gender inequality, whether we're talking about xenophobia or we're talking about classism, it doesn't matter. For the people of God, the healing begins when we remember. In everyday situations, walking down the street, in the grocery store, driving in our cars, when someone new or outside walks into our congregations, or we walk into our neighborhood with them, we remember that we were once on the outside, and by no work of our own, we were invited into the household of God. To be one of the saints, that's the term that we have in our text this morning. The original Greek is holy ones. We are invited to be one of the holy ones, those who are set aside for God, and to do God's work, and to have God live amongst us. I'm not saying that it fixes things overnight to remember that. Certainly, we must have debates. We must engage in laws and political discussions. Justice sometimes comes slow. But when we engage in debate and remember where we came from and what God has done for us, we engage in debate humbly with love. As we engage in our system of laws and courts and politics, we remember and we engage not with bitterness, but we engage with the value of others who have been so loved by God. Others for whom Christ has died. And although justice sometimes comes slow, we've got to start somewhere. And so that's where we start. We start with remembering. And as we consider that this morning, this World Communion Sunday, we consider the very simple way that Jesus asked us to remember, by the breaking of bread, by the sharing of the cup. He said, do this in remembrance of me, to remember who we are, who we were, and what Christ has brought us to. Let's reflect on those things as we sing our next hymn.